Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. My regular email is Deanna at Spingola.com, but I do not check that email during the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is David Livingstone, the author of The Dying God, A History of Western Civilization, and another book, Terrorism and the Illuminati, A 3,000-Year History. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and TheDyingGod.com. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah, we had a visit, over a year ago, I think. And anyway, you wrote a recent article called How Israel and the Americans Foster Islamic Fundamentalism to Stall Peace with the Palestinians and Other Imperialistic Objectives. And I found the article very interesting, and I thought, I got to get him back on the program.
Sounds good.
So here we are. Now, you also have a email list.
Right.
The Dying God, is that with, that's with Yahoo, is it?
Yahoo Groups, yeah.
Okay. And that's quite an active list. I'm not a member of it.
Yeah.
But I've had people tell me about it.
Okay, good.
So, anyways, that do you get a lot of activity on that list, and how many people are on that list?
It's not a huge list. It's about 300 or so people, I think.
Uh huh.
But yes, it's nice and active, and it's got a nice broad array of opinions, and I think that's the strength of the group. Is we try to. Because I think, you know, when it comes to issues like this that affect so many of us, and there's no need to become dogmatic, I think that there's always something you can learn from no matter what perspective somebody comes from. So we get lots of input, and it always, I think everybody benefits from it.
Certainly. And that's why I have a variety of people on my program to get different opinions and different perspectives so that people can kind of draw their own conclusions. And I think it's good to do what you're doing, to have that kind of a list where people are free to post things that aren't necessarily one opinion.
Exactly. Because you never know what you're going to learn from somebody who even thinks, you know, the opposite of you. Sometimes, you know, people who are devoted to the occult, they still sometimes have some, you know, valuable input. So we're not going to, you know, prejudice anybody for their backgrounds.
Interesting. Yes. Now, I have your book, Terrorism, and you really do go back a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, you start with the Lost Tribes. Your first chapter one, it's the Luciferian Bloodline.
Right.
And fallen angels, the Medes, the Scythians. A lot of interesting things there. Okay, we do have a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is David Livingstone. Is it Livingstone or Livingstone?
I'm not really sure.
Well, if you don't know, I'm not.
Whichever you prefer. I think it's Livingstone.
Okay, then we'll go with that. All right, let's talk about your article, your recent article first.
Okay.
You indicate, and I've got a link to this article, and the name of the article is "How Israel and the Americans Foster Islamic Fundamentalism to stall peace with the Palestinians and other imperialistic objectives. And, of course, we know that within this past week that the Palestinians were accorded a special something that they have been wanting to have for a long time, although I don't know that it's going to benefit them at all because it hasn't changed their existence or their relationship to the Israelis.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing that, and the Israelis seem to be worried about whether or not the Palestinians will now talk about the genocide that the Israelis have been executing against them and try to get some sort of redress. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, that article I actually wrote, I think, about a year ago, and Henry decided to repost it.
Right.
And, of course, it's obviously still relevant. And so I think there's the bigger picture there, which is, I think, to be considered and to be concerned about, which is the fact that now the Muslim Brotherhood is basically running Egypt, and now there's this, you know, ominous alignment now between Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. These both are probably, I think, I'm not sure at to what level, you know, both organizations are Israeli and British and American created. I'm not sure, you know, at what level in the hierarchy they are cognizant of that relationship. But and I think for the large majority of them are actually duped into thinking that these are causes for their own benefit. So I think that's what I'm looking at right now is basically just the larger picture.
Okay.
So yeah.
Now, it is about the, well, yeah, it's December, the 25th anniversary of the founding of the Hamas movement.
Right.
And some people think it's a wonderful thing, and you're suggesting that the Israelis actually created it for their own purposes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the trouble is, especially in the Islamic world, I think, is that the Islamic leadership, or the Arab leadership, whichever you want to call it, has been effectively neutered, and this is pretty much since the collapse of the Ottoman Empire
in 1924 or so. Uh-huh.
24, which was very much, you know, a long term, the fulfillment of a long term plan on the part of the British. So what has happened is that you have all these usurpers now coming to the fore, and they've all been almost entirely have been at the service of either British or the Americans. And so the two sides of the coin that you get is that you either get apologists or you get extremists. And, you know, most people are savvy enough to know that something fishy is going on, that, you know, most of America's battles are actually, you know, for the sake of Israel by proxy, like basically what's happening right now, it's Zionist foreign policy. And, you know, but no one's doing anything about it. So you get one voice who seems to be standing up, so people get attracted to it. So, and if they, you know, they'll often say the right things, they'll talk about, you know, Islam and bringing it back, Islamic values and things like that. So it's easy for people to get trapped into it, and that's how those organizations are used. But in the end, they're being used by the same forces that are, you know, otherwise undermining a part of the world.
Okay. And you said that you talked about Britain and America.
Yeah.
Do you mean the people, the puppet governments of Britain and America that are being run by another entity?
Yeah, I mean, that history goes back a long way, right? So certainly not the average American person, not the, what do they call them, the Joe? not the average Joe, but, you know, I think it's hard to say how many levels of power there are inside, how many levels of interest, but, generally what gets exercised as the, you know, the prominent mode of attack is usually the same crew and the same collaborators between both. Basically, you know, like I say, is that the real axis of evil is Israel, Britain, America, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan.
Okay. All right, I was just looking at the chat room to see if anybody said anything really profound. And they do. They do say a lot of profound things in the chat room.
Sure.
Okay, you talk about the Truman and Eisenhower administrations and what kind of influence that they had. And, of course, foreign policy changed at that time. We had this phony Cold War. And really, who do you think that benefited, the Cold War?
Well, before I get into that, I'd like to mention that I'm just finishing another book. It's called, the working title so far is called Black Terror, White Soldiers. So it covers this specifically. And then goes back a little bit in some of the material that I go into, that I cover in Terrorism Illuminati, but it basically takes it forward quite a bit. So, there's an important book on this subject. And so my Hamas article is based largely on Robert Dreyfus's Devil's Game, How America Unleashed Islamic Terrorism, or something like that. It's called Devil's Game. The other important book is by Ian Johnson. It's called A Mosque in Munich. And the title sounds specific. It is about a mosque specifically in Munich that was created by the CIA in collaboration with the Muslim Brotherhood. But the context is much larger than that, and the context is the Cold War. So the whole basis of the Cold War, of this fabricated communist threat, was to use terrorism against communism. So that terrorism had many manifestations that it took. It was... basically, it was the stay-behind units that were developed by NATO and the CIA after World War II, and they were located in various countries around the world, primarily Italy, Belgium, France, Germany, even Britain. The most famous case, of course, is Gladio in Italy. The other one is called Guerrilla, what is it called? Ergenekon, or Anti-Guerrilla in Turkey. And basically, a similar manifestation is the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And so this was actually a conscious decision on the part of the American government to, first of all, begin using covert activities. And so this meant all kinds of, it opened up a whole lot of things. I think it was Eisenhower who said something to the effect that, you know, no more Mr. Nice Guy, that, you know, America has to realize that, you know, we have to, you know, we've tried to play nice, but we realize that the world has changed and the gloves are off now, basically what he said. And so pretty much allowing anything, so all kinds of subversion down to assassination and basically false flag operations without actually coming out and saying it. So, and
of course,
so the strategy...
They had used false flag operations for a long time, but I think that Eisenhower and Truman resorted to propagandizing the American public, and they adopted these kinds of tactics as formally, whereas before they didn't have that as much. I've got some notes about that here on my computer somewhere, but. They really did alter the government, our government, yet again in 1947, and adopted many things that if the American public knew about, they'd be horrified about it. And in fact, I think there was a political coup in 1947, and certainly Eisenhower had quite a lot to do with it, but it started under President Roosevelt. And definitely Eisenhower and Truman began to use certain departments, certain agencies to develop these programs that were, well, completely unethical. And I mean, yeah. You know, you went from the OSS into the CIA, you know, which Truman just took all these people from the OSS, something like 13,000 men and women, and took them right into the CIA. And then you had the, you know, the Administrative Procedure Act, the creation of the National Security Council, the right. CIA. I mean, there was a lot of awful stuff going on.
Exactly.
And but anyway, go ahead.
Well, the key character, I think, there, I'm not sure how much he had a say in this turnaround, but I would suspect that Alan Dulles had a lot to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So, because what's the basis behind this, we'll call it, it's dirty tricks, right? It's kind of this, that's how the huge flip-flop happened after the war. We're getting interrupted, so...
All righty. We're going to a three-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is David Livingston. He is the author of two books and soon to be three books. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. And we were kind of talking about all of the events following World War II, and there are just so many things that happened. You had you had the Smith-Mundt Act. You had all kinds of laws that allowed the executive branch to legally propagandize the American public, which was something that they had not done before. You had the creation of the CIA. You had the creation of the UN. Just so many things. Basically, a fourth branch of the government, wherein they had became more of a bureaucracy, and the Senate and the House didn't have a whole lot to say with this big cabinet that the president now could control, where everybody was essentially responsible to the president. Okay, continue.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that. So if this new dirty trick strategy, which was using terrorists, typically right-wing terrorists across Europe and the Middle East, to supposedly combat communism, the key factor here is the survival of the Nazis after the war. It's important to remember, first of all, that the Americans... Well, you have to be careful when we say Americans. There's a certain faction within America that assisted Hitler to power. And they were centered around Rockefeller Standard Oil. There's also a Skull and Bones connection, because most of those characters were with Skull and Bones, like the Harriman brothers and the Bush family and so on.
Okay. So, now they did not actually put Hitler into power. The German population were behind Hitler and his rise to power. They certainly did make investments in German companies at that time because they were multinational. But I don't think you can legitimately say that the Harrimans put Hitler into power, because there are too many books that counter that theory. It's a popular myth.
Okay, well, but yeah, I'm not sure about that. There's what's his first name, Haim, who did Trading with the Enemy, which is excellent, and it's substantial. And you know,
right, Trading with the Enemy. He was Jewish, and certainly, if you read his background and figure out what his agenda might be, then you can kind of see where that came from. But there are books that counter that quite well.
I'm not sure, but from what I see is that the case is pretty strong, especially if you look at the relationship between Standard Oil and IG Farben. So you mean
okay, that,
and
those
not
are
only
both
that,
multinational you, companies.
Okay, well, because it's a bit of a story, because basically if you want to follow people like Otto Skorzeny and Helmut Schacht from that period right up until through the post-war period, and see their substantial role within this new Cold War strategy, and it's pivotal.
Well, Schacht, Yes, he was. He was a. He was certainly initially part of the Hitler's administration.
Yeah.
But he escaped the retribution at Nuremberg, walked away with basically nothing happening to him, and I certainly think he had infiltrated the situation there for the purposes that he did. But they got rid of him.
But they didn't get rid of Reinhard Gehlen, and they didn't get rid of Otto Skorzeny, and those were the two key masterminds of America's Cold War strategy.
I don't know.
And that's what happened. So this is Otto Skorzeny. So Reinhard Gehlen sets up what becomes the BND, and Otto Skorzeny is recruited to basically train right-wing fanatics all over the world. And that includes...
And what is your proof of this?
There's lots. You have to read...
Okay, well, give me some proof.
Plenty. There's Otto Skorzeny's. Read Infield's Skorzeny's biography. And, I mean, the proof is extensive. I don't have the footnotes at hand, but there's many different angles you can... Skorzeny was all over the place. The first place he went to was Argentina, which is where most...
How do you know that?
I mean, how do I know? How do I know that? There's enough evidence. I can't say that I saw him there. You know what I mean? But the evidence is plenty. How do I know Eisenhower was president? I mean, you know, some of these facts.
We have proof of that.
Known facts. The fact that Skorzeny was in Argentina is a known fact. And that's where...
Known fact,
in Argentina is where he connects with Gladio. So Skorzeny was training with Gladio characters. He was training...
Hold that thought. We do have to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is David Livingston. He is the author of a couple of books, has another one coming out. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. So what is your feeling, David, about Jim Mars and his recent book? I think it's the last one he wrote. I think it's entitled The Fourth Reich. What is your feeling?
It's okay. You know, I took a read through it, but there's only part of the information there as far as I'm concerned. And I think, you know, the general gist of it is, I think that's the reality. You know, it sounds almost absurd to see, you know, I think it was Rosenberg who threatened that we would see that within a certain time the Nazis would be back in power. And, I mean...
And you think that Nazis are, I don't know how we got carried off onto this
because it's the heart of the Cold War strategy.
You mean the Nazis are in power? Are behind the U.S. government and they're in charge of everything?
No, I didn't say that. What I'm saying is that some of the more prominent Nazis managed to resuscitate their careers after the war, and they were employed by the CIA primarily for their stay behind strategy, and you know, the extent of the power that they retained after the war is substantial, and that goes back to Schacht and Skorzeny, who were in charge of managing the what they called the Nazi gold, which is the wealth that they misappropriated during World War II. One of the primary managers of that is a guy named Francois Genoux, and he's another guy who's heavily implicated.
I suppose you think that they might be in charge of 9/11. Do you think that they carried out 9/11?
Well, you know, I mean, most of those guys are dead and gone now. See, what's more interesting is, first of all, how the Nazis were used for the Stay Behind Network, but also how...
Which Stay Behind Network are you talking about?
Well, they're called stay-behind units. It's basically NATO's, that's what it's called, the NATO's, there's an excellent book on the whole subject, which has basically completely blown the whole thing wide open in detail, which is Daniel Gantzer's, I think it's called NATO Stay Behind or something like that. It's excellent.
And who is he?
Pardon?
Who is he?
I don't know. He's an academic. Or the thing is that most of the documents were released, I think, at some point in the 90s or something like that.
Released from what?
From there, a lot of them were declassified or whatever.
Declassified from who?
From, I guess, the CIA in a large part, NATO to another extent.
What about all the documents that were released or made available in Russia in 1991? What do those say about the Nazis being in charge of things?
I don't know. I'm not saying they're in charge of things. I'm saying that because the other factor, what I'm saying is that there's a certain kind of ideological survival of the post-war Nazis, and that took the form of an international neo-fascist movement. And that was, first of all, you have the ideologues of it, and it's people like Savitri Devi. Black Sun, there's a book called Black Sun by Goodrich Clark, Nicholas Goodrich Clark, who's the same author as the Area Sophie. I'm not sure, I can't remember the exact title, but about the Nazis and the occult. So what happened?
Where do you get this Nazis and the occult nonsense?
I mean, just by the fact that they call themselves Aryan and use a swastika.
Do you realize where the swastika came from?
Yes, I do. It comes from India.
No, it comes from a lot of different places.
Okay, so it comes from a lot of places.
Including Christianity.
That's the idea. So what? But the question is, why did the Nazis believe it was such an important symbol? And that's the real question. Because, you know...
Well, tell me. Why do you think they...
Now, if you want to understand the role of India and Tibet...
Why do you think that they chose that symbol?
Because, it's a cross. So it's an occult cross. And basically, the cross is understood in the
occult?
Have always been... For 2,000 years, the cross has been understood to symbolize the intersection of the celestial and earthly equator. That's one of the reasons. But, you know, the thing is that the Nazi philosophy came from indirectly from Blavatsky and Edward Bull Rollet.
Wait. You just can't make those kind of statements without backing them up. The swastika has been a Christian symbol for a long time. In fact, the first time that Hitler saw it was on a church.
Yeah.
And that is why he adopted it. And then it became red due to all the slaughter of members of the NSDAP, and that is where they adopted the red background as part of the flag. So I don't think that you can really say that the swastika has an occult background when it has a Christian background. It was used in very, very ancient Christian rites.
We're getting off track.
Well, you brought it
There's more to talk about than that, because that's just, I mean, if you can read René Guénon's Symbolism of the Cross, where he connects it to the swastika and explains the whole background. And you know, it's a Gnostic idea that goes all the way back. It goes all the way back to Mithras, and that's why Mithras stands on a globe with two intersecting circles, because it's a wheel inside a wheel. It's the intersecting.
Okay, well let's get back to who you think is running things and how the Nazis somehow survived all the Allied bombing and how they survived Nuremberg trials. And how most of the leadership was killed, but somehow certain Nazis lived. And you mentioned Scorsese. Now he was in Berlin. He was in Berlin on July 20th, 1944, when there was an attempt on Hitler's life. Now, did he participate in that?
I don't know. He participated in some daring rescue. No, that was Mussolini. But, I mean, he was Hitler's bodyguard, pretty much. He was like his right-hand man.
Hitler had some other right-hand men that actually knew him and took care of a lot of the things that needed to be taken care of. I don't remember that he was one of them.
Okay, so where I was going is that there's an ideological survival of what evolved into what's called esoteric Hitlerism. So Hitler, basically, post-war, this was articulated primarily by Savitri Devi, and she developed this idea, we're always going to go, when it comes to the occult, especially from Blavatsky's tradition, we're always going back to India.
Now, have you read her books?
And so she developed
this idea. Have you read her books?
No.
Okay, I have, and I don't. I don't see that she goes. Talks about the people you're talking about.
She doesn't talk about the people she talks about. What she does talk about is that she regarded Hitler as an avatar of Vishnu, and Savitri Devi did participate
you read
in
her
the founding of the World Socialist.
Have you read her books?
WNS, the World Union of National Socialists. That's a fact. And
okay,
the World
David,
Union of National Socialists.
David,
but it doesn't
have you
matter.
Read her
books? It doesn't matter. No, it's not the point. The point
then
is
how
that
do you
she
know what she believes? If you
I'm
haven't read
about
her books, how do you know what she believes and what she thinks?
That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
What we're trying to do, I'm trying to talk about the stay behind network.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is that the people who were hired to train these right-wing networks around the world were former Nazis. Primarily, chief among them was Otto Skorzeny. Otto Skorzeny was the guy who was mainly doing most of the training. He also trained Yasser Arafat, by the way. He also, and Reinhard Gehlen was the other main one. So I didn't say all the Nazis survived, but there's a handful of them who were very important who did.
Skorzeny also train the Israelis, who later came over to this country and has been training all of the police forces in this country? Is that part of the network also?
I've never heard of it.
Okay.
But this is the key. This is what's happening. This is why I was talking about the ideological survival, because it connects to Gladio as well. Because Gladio, the person who inspired the Gladio network was a guy named Julius Evola. And Julius Evola was, again, part of this kind of international post-war fascist network, which includes, indirectly, Savitri Devi. And that's what's going on.
That's what's going on. What specifically is going on?
Okay. So basically, that was the heart of the Cold War. So the two places to look at it basically is.
Okay,
Egypt,
you're saying that Gehlen and Skorzeny are two Nazis that survived, and that they perpetrated the Cold War. That they were the philosophical.
I didn't say they perpetrated the Cold War. I said they were recruited to the Cold War.
Okay, so they created the philosophy that served the function during the Cold War.
You know, I think you're worried about what you think I'm going to say, and you're not listening to what I'm saying.
No, I'm listening.
No, you're not, because that's not where I'm going. You're completely extrapolating what I'm trying to say, and it's not anywhere what I'm trying to say.
Well, okay, tell us what you're trying to say.
Okay, so. Well, we're talking about many things. So I'm trying to put the Muslim Brotherhood in perspective is what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
So to understand where the Muslim Brotherhood comes from, that's why I call my book A 3,000-Year History, because you have to understand the history of the occult. It's not an Islamic organization. It poses as an Islamic organization, but it's at the core, it's an occult organization, Masonic. They basically, secretly derived from an Ismaili tradition, so on and so on and so forth, which is what connects them to Nazism, which is why they've had such an ongoing relationship with the Nazis.
How can they have an ongoing relationship with the Nazis when the Nazis are gone?
Well, they're not gone. They're neo-Nazis now.
And what would be considered a neo-Nazi group?
Well, this is why I'm saying that, anyway, I know what's going to happen if I go that direction. So, Skorzeny, I don't want to go back to the same topic, because I'd like to move forward. So, Hitler basically recruited Hassan al-Banna, who was the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he recruited him to create an arm of German intelligence in Egypt. And so that was the initial purpose of it. But basically, after World War II, that control got handed over to the CIA, which is basically part of the same kind of transfer of I'm not, you're going to think I mean all Nazis. I don't mean the entire Nazi regime. There's a certain number of Nazis who were retained after that to continue to train the Muslim Brotherhood, which then... this is why the Muslim Brotherhood continues to have ties with leading neo-Nazis. And one of the this relationship with is François Genoux.
Okay, tell me who some of these neo-Nazis are. I want to be able to know who they are so I can avoid them.
Okay. Well, I told you that they're, you know...
I need to know who I should be afraid of. I mean, if there's a bunch of neo-Nazis running around, I need to know about it.
Well, I mean, the most of them are gone now. Like I said, there's Reinhard Gehlen, there's Otto Skorzeny, and primarily François Genoux. Then there's like other guys like Ahmed Huber, who supposedly converted to Islam. And then there's like this extended international neo-Nazi network, and you have guys like, you know, one of the chief kind of ideologues of this is called a guy called Miguel Serrano. Then you have, this network's link to organizations in the United States.
Like
Aryan nations, the Christian Identity Movement, and so on and so forth.
Oh, you think the Nazis are running the Christian, the CIA movement?
I didn't say running.
Okay,
that's
so
like
what
happened? That's like seeing Blavatsky's running the New Age movement.
Okay, so what is their affiliation with the CIA movement?
With the who, sorry?
Christian Identity.
Well, it's basically... You know, Christian Identity is an appropriation of
Zionism?
Same kind of, you know, Aryan kind of traditional ideas to Christianity.
Christian Identity, they're an exclusive group, but they kind of sound more exclusivity that we find in Judaism.
Well, that's not good either, is it?
No.
No.
But anyway, okay, getting back to... All right. Where would you like to go with this? You're trying to say that, what, Muslims are Nazis?
Well, No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, what are Nazis anyway? Nazis basically is a fringe group that they were kind of occult elitists, and they happen to call themselves Nazis.
Call themselves Nazis. Never call themselves Nazis. That was a name that was given to them by the Allies.
Okay, so they didn't call themselves that. Doesn't matter. It's not the point. Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does matter. It really does matter.
Okay.
So, and you keep saying they were a cult, but you don't furnish any proof.
Well,
they weren't a fringe group. They weren't a fringe group. They were elected to power, it wasn't like some fringe group.
Well, I think they did start out as a fringe group, and then they got the power, so they got elected. So that doesn't make a contradiction.
All righty, we're going to a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, guest today is David Livingston, the author of two books. He's coming out with a new book and his websites. He's got a couple of different websites here. Let me just scroll down. Terrorism-Illuminati.com and TheDyingGod.com. And we were talking about how Israel and the Americans foster Islamic fundamentalism to stall peace with the Palestinians and other imperialistic objectives. And we got kind of carried away into no man's land. And I think it's important to you mentioned a couple of what you call Nazis, Gelin and Skorzeny. But it's important to recognize that that Nazism or the party, the policies of the National Socialistic Party in Germany was totally nationalistic. They were not internationalist. They were only focusing on their country, what was good for their country. Their focus was not international in the very least, and Lisa in the chat room reminded us of that. And so if you're talking about Gelin and Skorzeny trying to head an international movement, that does not seem to be consistent with what their initial program stood for. And now you're saying that they created the Muslim Brotherhood, which is an international movement, I assume?
Yeah, well, there's a difference between internationalist and international. I didn't say they were internationalist.
Well, what did you say?
There's no reason why post-war Nazis would want to link up with other Nazis around the world. But, I mean, it's not really the point. The point is that Gelin was Skorzeny was hired to offer terrorist training around the world. And he offered terrorist training with the AAA in Argentina.
It was my understanding that the CIA has done most of the training of terrorists throughout the world. I mean, they taught all the terrorists in the Central America, South America. That was their function. That basically were put into power, put into business after World War II. To create psychological warfare. The CIA is not an intelligence gathering operation, and that is a big misconception that is one of the agency's greatest propaganda triumphs. Their main purpose is, and always has been, carrying out covert operations involving economic warfare, rigged elections, assassinations, and genocide. And according to one source, John Stockwell, at least 6 million people have perished up to 1987 as a result of the CIA's covert operations. The CIA distorts information, perpetuates misinformation and disinformation to justify its own goals. So I'm not sure how or why you would bring in two people, leftovers, or what did you call them, left behind, to do all this training.
It's the entire post-war CIA and NATO strategy.
Amazing. Okay. We do have to take our 60-second top of the hour break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is David Livingston. He is the author of The Dying God, A History of Western Civilization. His second book, or is it the second book, or is that your first one? Terrorism and the Illuminati, A 3,000-Year History. Which one did you write first?
The Dying God.
Okay. And you have another book coming out, but you have not titled it yet. And your websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. Now, in your terrorism book, which I do have, you go back, eons and talk about terrorism. And you associate it with the Illuminati. And of course, you've talked about, did you talk about the Bolshevik Revolution and some of the other horrible things that have happened I mean, a lot of things happened before 1933. You talk about the Federal Reserve, League of Nations. You talk about the fall of the empire, the Ottoman Empire. You talk about all kinds of things that happened before 1933, before Hitler came to power in Germany. And most of this terrorism that occurred before 1933 was perpetrated by one particular group. Now, are you saying that that group retired and that these two Nazis then picked up where the other people left off?
The Nazis are just a faction of that group.
They're part of the Jews?
They're part of an occult network.
And who's running this?
They're of no religion. They're of a Luciferian religion.
And it is my understanding that most of the people who belong to the NSDAP were Christian.
Yeah, but what kind of Christian? You know, there's been Christian heretics throughout history. There's the Cathars, there's the Gnostics. You know, the Gnostics.
Well, weren't the Khazars Jewish?
And this is what's happening these days, is you get a lot of books that are trying to suggest that the Catholic Church has been suppressing the so-called true Christianity. But what they mean is they're not the Christianity. So you have Christians, a certain type of Christian who claims they have the true Christianity, except that they read the Bible in reverse. And that's what Gnosticism is. You know, there's a lot of Masons who think that they're Christian, that Freemasonry is compatible with Christianity.
I don't think
that. It depends on what level
they
enter that organization, but if they don't understand what it ultimately means, they don't realize that it's a direct contradiction of Christianity.
Oh, I've always thought that, too. I mean, Freemasonry has no place in Christianity at all.
Right. So it doesn't matter if Christians are involved, because, you know, like, there's claims that Weishaupt was a Christian.
I don't think I ever read that.
Yeah. He expressed certain kind of, you know, a Christian interpretation of the Illuminati, but it's a Gnostic interpretation.
Okay. All righty. Okay, so where do you want to, the occult network? It's still in place, and who's running it now?
I don't know. Same, you know, it's the leadership is constantly changing. I don't know. I don't ever try to identify who's in charge. I just try to. It's even almost impossible to figure out where they're going. But
really?
At least you can identify what they've done, which can help you understand what's happening. So, you know, we can easily see through things like the Arab Spring and the so-called democratization of the Middle East, because we know what their MO is.
Okay. I'm sorry. We do have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back, and we'll take your phone calls. Welcome back. We will take your calls at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is David Livingston. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. And I would assume that you're against corporate Christianity.
Sorry?
I would assume that you are against corporation churches that are actually corporations designed to take in money.
I don't know. It's not necessarily it's the first I've heard of it.
You don't realize that churches are federal corporations, 501(c) corporations.
Why does it matter?
Well, you were talking about Christianity and I believe, you know, fake Christianity. And I think when an organization is set up to take in money to invest in, you know, pharmaceutical companies or whatever, and they're only creating an entity in order to do that while preaching Christianity on the side, I think that's a problem.
Well, you know, I'm, that, but my concern would be more for the bigger picture of things like the Christian identity movement. Of course, the way that the Christian right has been hijacked by the neoconservatives.
Okay, and who's behind the neoconservatives? Aren't those Trotskyites?
Well, they used to be Trotskyites. Now they're basically the neoconservatives. They came to power in the early 70s, but mainly under Reagan. And because they followed Leo Strauss, they realized that people needed lies. And Leo Strauss called religion heroic delusions. And they figured that they're a small network of radical intellectuals, and the only way for them to get a mass movement was to align themselves with the Christian right. So they teamed up with the Heritage Foundation and the Moral Majority.
Yeah, they created the Moral Majority, actually.
Among them, and that's how they took over the Christian movement to be able to preach their neoliberal doctrine.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But don't you think that the corporate churches contribute to they have politicized many things such as abortion in order to create a constituency that would never have gotten involved in politics to begin with.
Right.
Okay. Well, why don't we take a call? Why don't we take Tom in Pennsylvania? Tom, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Deanna.
Hi.
I'll say Mr. Livingston isn't very clear, and I'm not getting very much out of what he's saying. And my comment is the biggest fighter of communism in the world was Adolf Hitler. And they put him to rest, unfortunately. But I don't get... I'm not getting much out of what Mr. Livingston has to say, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but you're asking him the right questions, but he doesn't seem to be coming up with any answers or correct answers, should I say.
Could you give me a specific question, and I'll try to answer it?
The whole blooming conversation, you seem unknowledgeable. And I don't.
Well, I'm trying to get to my point, but it hasn't been easy. So
I don't even know what your point is, really. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I guess that's about it. Thank you, Deanna.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Let's. Okay. What is your point?
My point?
Yep.
That's what you're asking me?
Yep. And that's what Tom was asking.
Hoping we were going to spend about an hour doing that, so,
okay.
It depends on what he's trying to ask me. I mean, he says I don't have a point, but he doesn't have a direct question for me, so I don't understand what's the contradiction. So Hitler fought communism. That's precisely why they hired ex-Nazis in the post-war era to continue the fight against communism, because they were such rabid anti-communists.
Oh, okay, so they were helping people.
Oh, well. If you want to look at it that way, if you want to look at basically, blowing up supermarkets of people and just to blame it on the Communist Party, if you look at that as helping people.
Okay, give us what, when did that happen?
Well, it happened throughout the 1970s in Italy primarily. It happened many times. That was the whole point. That's what it was. Michael Ledeen who was in charge of that operation, pretty well in charge. That's a dangerous accusation, but he's heavily implicated. Him and Alexander Haig, who were members of the P2 Masonic Lodge, and which is where this whole Gladio network connects. These are all guys who are ex-fascists. They have ties with Argentina, with fascists all over the world.
Well, you keep saying
the leading terrorist was a guy named Stefano Della Chiesa. He's deep in Gladio. He's also a member of P2. He was another one of Scorzini's right-hand men. And this is what they did throughout the 70s. They would basically blow up innocent people and say, look, this is what communists do, and to try to discredit the Communist Party. And I'm not pro-communism, but this is a Hegelian dialectic thing going here. It's just, it's two phony oppositions to create order out of chaos.
And you're saying that the two Nazis taught everybody in the Gladio operation? And yet you're
trying
bringing...
not to put words in my mouth. That's not what I'm saying. Did you say Jew Nazi?
No, two Nazis.
Two Nazis. Okay, sorry.
I don't think I was trying to put words in your mouth. I'm trying to understand what
I'm
you're
saying. I'm not
trying,
saying everything, but Skorzeny was one of the key trainers, one of the key operators. I'm not sure what level he was at.
How long did he train?
Well, until he died, until the early 70s. I think it was the early 70s.
Okay, so he was born when? I don't know much about him, actually.
I don't know. He fought in World War II. He basically, they said they thought he was too old to join the fight, and so I think he was about 30 or something like that by the time World War II came around.
Gosh, I thought that World War II. I know that Germany used just about every able-bodied man in the country. I don't think 30 would be too old to fight.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, so, but you're saying that that he taught Ledeen, Michael Ledeen, and some of these
Ledeen.
Pardon me?
No, he didn't teach Ledeen. He created what's called the Paladin Network, which was based in, that was one of some of his networks. That was based in Spain, and many fascists from around the world would go there to train. When they were there, this was under Franco, the fascist Franco, they would be used to fight the Basque terrorists, and then they would be sent back to their countries to suppress, left-wing activists. So this is how he was training. This is how he would be connected to a guy like Stefano Della Chiesa, or how they were sending back terrorists to fight for the AAA in Argentina and places like that. This is a whole thing called Operation Condor, which is what the CIA was backing in South America, which was basically producing death squads to suppress. Because remember, this is following just right after the coup in Chile, so they wanted to keep that. They wanted to keep control over it, so they developed all these death squads to make sure that they disappeared any people.
And the death squads, I believe, were CIA.
Well, yes, the CIA trained by Skorzeny.
You know, the OSS had 13,000 people in it during World War II, and how all of a sudden could he possibly be brought over here to train somebody that was already trained? I think you're giving him way too much credit for things, and I'm not sure.
You're putting words in my mouth. You're exaggerating what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I didn't say he trained everybody. I'm just saying that he was one of the key operators. I've tried to say that a few times.
Okay.
The Paladin Group out of Spain was one of the main networks. Same as Agenter Press, which is another one, and that's what connects them to Gladio in Italy.
Okay. So you think that... So who do you think... You said...
There's OAS, too, in France, which they were deeply connected with.
Okay. He was hit in the back of the head by shrapnel in December of 1942, and yet you're saying he didn't fight in the war.
I didn't say he didn't fight the war. I said that. Look, this. You know, I'm not throwing things off the top of my head. This is well known history. The guy has he's one of the considered one of the heroes of the Third Reich. So. His history is well known.
I've never really considered him one of the heroes of the Third Reich. I guess we just run in different groups.
Maybe not from our point of view, but from the Nazi point of view, definitely.
The Nazi point of view?
So I didn't say wasn't allowed to fight. He when he originally tried to join, they told him that he was too old, but he managed to get in somehow anyway, and eventually became Hitler's primary commando. He was involved in all kinds of operations. Like, one of the most famous ones is why he went to the Nuremberg trials, that he dressed up his unit in American officers to infiltrate the front line, I think, in Belgium or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And
okay,
that's what they tried to try him on in Nuremberg trials was for impersonating.
David, we do have to take a real quick break. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is David Livingston. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. And, yes, he did fight in the war. We're talking about Skorzeny. He did fight in the war. He was considered too tall to be part of the, to be in the air. Let's see, let me get back up here. He was a civil engineer. He was turned down because he was too tall, too old. He was 31 for aircrew training. So then he joined Hitler's bodyguard regiment. And there's quite a lot of information about him. And certainly he was a prisoner of war for more than 2 years before being tried as a war criminal at the Dachau trials in 1947 for allegedly violating the laws of war. And he escaped from prison in the Odessa. He was in Spain. He was a Paladine Group in the 1960s, set up the Paladine Group. He worked for the Greek military junta of 1967. In 1970, he had a cancerous tumor on his spine. I just don't see that he did everything that you seem to be claiming that he did. But that's beside the point. We do have another caller. Let's take Shelley in Texas. Shelley, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Deanna and David. Deanna, by the way, thank you so much for your apt description of Christian identity. I have kind of struggled with that group myself because a lot of their historical research seems right on, but they are a group of exclusivity that can only be compared to Zionism and Judaism, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you pointing that out. David, you know, I don't know. I think that misinformation and disinformation is a form of terrorism, personally, and I'm really quite sick of the lies, equating the neo-Nazis with, I mean, you know, everything that you said could be substituted with the word Zionist or Jew. Everything about the neo-Nazis or the Nazis, the Illuminati. And I wonder if instead of your thesis, I guess, for an upcoming book, which I might purchase just to disprove it. I mean, it sounds like if you studied it throughout ancient history until now, terrorism and the Illuminati, I might just purchase it to substitute, instead of terrorism, usury, and instead of the Illuminati, the Jews. Do you have a comment on that?
It's a difficult comment. I think you're trying to back me in the corner.
No.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, I cover a lot of territory, so, you know, it's hard to know what you're talking about specifically.
Well, it's hard to know what you're talking about specifically. Illuminati and the Nazis are still in control.
You're repeating what Deanna's saying. I didn't say the Nazis are still in control. I said the Nazis after World War II and played a substantial role in the
ideological survival of the post-war Nazis. And there's extensive neo-Nazi network, and they are in power. The neo-Nazis are in power. And you gave examples of the Aryan Nation and Christian identity. Yeah, you did, sir.
Well, you know, it's new information. So, you know, I'm glad that you're on.
Well, would you address my question? If you change the thesis of your book to instead of the Illuminati and terrorism.
Well, I mean, where do you want to start? Because
to the Jews and usury, and how that controls and destroys empire.
So, yeah, but
because it's very important, sir. It's what's happening now, right now in the United States. It's what happened in Germany. It is what happened in a different way under communism in the in Russia.
What's your point?
It's important. So why give these ephemeral terms and outright lies about the Nazis? What would you consider Hitler to be politically? This is another question I've had.
What is
he politically?
Both Deanna are basically, like, I don't understand why, if I am identifying Nazi influence post-Cold War, then all of a sudden I'm saying something controversial. I'm saying something that's...
Because I don't believe it's true.
That's fine.
Just listening to Deanna, she's done all the reading and the heavy homework.
Okay. This is the first she's heard about Otto Skorzeny.
Excuse me?
This is the first that she's heard of Otto Skorzeny.
Oh, I've heard his name before.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're just starting to look up a little bit more about him. Now you're finding out that most of the things I've said are backed up.
Well, no, I'm...
And that's just the beginning. There's more.
Well, I'm... Okay, we do have to go to a break. Shelley, you're welcome to stay over the break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is David Livingston. His websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. And David, I did not mean to imply that I'd never heard of Skorzeny.
Okay.
But I indicated that I did not think that he had played this huge, important part, particularly post-war, that you're trying to attribute to him, when, in fact, the CIA was quite well established before he got out of jail, before he got done with the DACA trial. And I know that through paperclip that many Germans were brought over.
Exactly. So he organized. He was basically largely in charge of the Odessa network.
Okay, Shelley is still on. Shelley, did you have
Yeah. I would have liked to have had him, or you for that matter, Hitler's political party. How would you classify him in terms of politics?
Politics, you know,
isn't he usually labeled as something in
the
media?
So,
All right. Well, the Illuminati. I mean,
the Illuminati,
you know, you said that there's an occult.
So the point of the Illuminati.
Neo-Nazi Luciferian network still running the world, but it's impossible to identify them. Sir, what are you smoking? I mean, seriously, label them Jews, and I think it'll solve your problem.
Thank you.
Okay. All righty.
Thank you.
Let me answer that question then.
Go ahead, please.
So, what is Illuminati? Illuminati basically is an organization which has been proven to have existed, proven to have had a mission or a project for, you know, at least European domination, political infiltration, so on and so forth. That's proven.
Mm-hmm.
No,
like
one's
the Freemasons.
No one's going to argue with what their goals were. It's fact. What's going to be argued with is that they survived beyond 1785. If you want a good book on the subject, then I highly recommend Terry Melanson's Perfectibilis. It's the most detailed study of the Illuminati in the English language that I know of, and it's obvious that the organization survived. Doesn't matter. Illuminati is a handy term to use to those, basically, they're conspirators. And they follow activities and beliefs that can be traced back at least a couple thousand years. As crazy as that sounds, that's what it is. And if we want to
were they originally funded by Rothschild?
Where there's no creeps out there, you know, that's not the way out. If you want to really address the situation for reality for what it is, unfortunately, we have to accept that there's...
Address reality for what it is, and yet you can't identify this elusive boogie bear other than neo-Nazi.
A continuation same belief structure as what the Illuminati used to represent. If you want to find out what that is, it's all very...
No, not really. I don't think I'll waste the time except to correct your misinterpretation of history, that is terrorism and the Illuminati throughout the ages.
We both can't talk at the same time. Okay. I guess Illuminati is really just a general term, and you're really not saying who funded it, and Shelley did ask you who funded it. And it is a general term where, and you said before, we really don't know who's running things. And then you said it doesn't matter. But I think it does matter. And I think that, yes, there was an Illuminati. It did move forward. It infiltrated the Freemasonry lodges. But I think that in order to figure out how to solve the world's problems, we really have to determine who is behind all the problems. And I don't think that saying, oh, it's the Illuminati, is going to cut it.
Well, maybe not for you, but that's maybe you're misunderstanding how the term is being used.
Okay.
The word Illuminati is just to begin the discussion. Then this is what we're doing. This is what we're talking about.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what you want to call this organization that unites Alan Dulles and Otto Skorzeny, right? Is it Nazism? Is it Illuminati? Is it Gnosticism?
International Judaism?
Because it also unites them with the Muslim Brotherhood. So what is, you know...
How about international Judaism?
In their beliefs, what unites Alan Dulles Skorzeny and
Muslim CIA Muslim? And the Mossad?
That's the question. So for convenience, we might as well call it the Illuminati because we can always identify it as being the same kind of basic belief system, and the Nazis followed the same belief system.
Well, now you cannot bring in stuff like that you cannot prove, and you just aren't able to prove it. You keep repeating
There's the whole crew who created all that stuff, the whole Aryan philosophy, and it starts with Subotendorf, and where it starts.
Do not buy it.
No, and then where he started was by joining Masonic lodges in Turkey.
This is Hitler we're talking about? You said Aryan philosophy? Who are you referring to?
Basically, the Aryan philosophy that was the background of Nazism.
That is where you're wrong. Excuse me.
I mean, that's nice.
We do have
plenty of information. I mean, we can either talk about how long
thank
I am,
you,
or
Deanna.
Just let me explain my point.
And David, sorry if I sounded rude, but I am just really frustrated with all this disinformation, misinformation, and downright lying. Okay?
But you know
thank
what?
You.
I'm not your enemy. You know, we're you the
three. Oh,
of us,
I don't consider you an enemy.
We're all in this together. So we may not agree, but we have to
Label who
we're,
the
we're
real
all
enemy
the
is.
Of all this nonsense.
And don't, you know,
well,
don't give them an elusive, unprovable.
We're together what we should be frustrated about.
All right.
All right.
Thanks,
Deanna. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Let's take Joel in Wisconsin. Joel, welcome to the program.
Some of your callers don't understand what he's talking about and obviously don't agree with him. Well, I don't know what he's talking about either because he's been interrupted more times than I've ever heard anyone be interrupted on your program. Now, I don't know if you'd call that rude or not. I'm not saying. And I'm not saying whether I agree with him or not because I don't know what he's talking about because you never had a chance to say what he wants to say. And here's one for you, Diana. I've called before when you've had guests and challenged them, and you would say, have you read their book? Have you read their book? And I said, no. So then you'd say, read the book. Well, I'm asking you, have you read his book?
I have.
Okay. That answers that. That doesn't mean he wasn't interrupted more times. Sounds like he's in court and they keep...
Well, because I brought this gentleman on to talk about one thing, and he's been talking about something entirely different. And I expected that we would stay on topic, which I probably failed to keep the direction of the program going in the direction that I wanted it to go. But certainly when you bring up things that that seem irrelevant and are misinformation, disinformation, I am going to challenge it. That is just the way it is. I do not allow disinformation on this program, period, plain and simple.
All right, I respect that, but when the audience doesn't know what's going on, maybe you should explain, if you could, to the audience why you're doing what you're doing, because it sounds like you're just against him. And I don't know what he said.
No, yes. I'm not against any guest that comes on the program. But I am against spinning information that you cannot corroborate and that you cannot prove. That I just don't think that's a great idea.
Can you explain what my disinformation is, please, for all our benefit?
That you mentioned that the Nazis were a cult. You brought up the swastika, tried to spin that. And
why is that a problem?
You do not, and you also brought up the trying to say that that Hitler was backed by certain people here in this country. And that is just not the case. If you were to read Poole's book, James Poole, he wrote a couple of books, Who Financed Hitler. It's a very, very well-documented book, very lengthy, well-documented book. And yet more people use the book that was written by a Jewish individual that you brought up, his book. I don't have it right on hand.
What about Anthony Sutton?
Anthony Sutton, who was associated with Stanford University, the Stanford Institute, and I do not believe the stuff that he has put into his book, and because there are a lot of facts that or a lot of disinformation in his book, and I'm sorry, I'm going to counter that kind of thing. That
so
is
you're
just
solving the Nazis?
The way it is. Pardon me?
You're saying the Nazis were all on their own?
No, that is not what I'm saying. They did have funding, but you're trying to imply that Bush and Harriman funded Adolf Hitler, and that is just not true. Because when you when you say that, you imply that they therefore controlled him. And what he did... You're interrupting me now. Okay? He was not funded by people here. He was therefore not controlled by people here. He threw the international bankers out of the country, created an economic system that worked that did not include usury. Okay, and when you read these other books, there's never any indication of what he did for the country while the United States was absolutely in the worst depression. Germany was forging ahead. They had all kinds of infrastructure projects. People were working. He put 6 million people back to work in 3 years, and that is what these other books do not cover, and that is why they tell you that he was funded by somebody else to avoid covering what he did do. So when you try and spin that kind of information on my program, sir, I am going to counter it.
Okay. Well,
thanks. Joel, does that answer your question?
It's a little clearer.
Okay.
But I think the difference of opinions is healthy, should be healthy. And
absolutely. I think that David and I will part company on friendly terms. So anyway, thank you, Joel, for calling into the program.
Okay.
Okay. Let's take Jeff in Vermont. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Deanna, David. I think what a lot of the frustration is with this is that being in the, you know, studying 9/11 and the stuff that you've been told to and people and talk radio and stuff and people that are telling you stuff, there's a lot of lies out there, and I think it's frustrating for a lot of people to hear something coming out of your mouth, like poltergeist, like the Illuminati, the globalists, the elite, and everybody blames the Nazis for all the problems of the world, and anybody with half a brain that does their research can figure out that's not the case. So with that being said, sir, what's your views on the Holocaust? I know you're a bright man, you probably studied it, and I would like to know what your answer would to that be, and I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, you know, I think what it comes down to is how the whole scenario has been painted, and I think if this is kind of addresses what the last woman said, that, you know, all of a sudden, this is the same kind of ad hominem, which is always used, that if you start talking about Jewish culpability, Jewish guilt, then you're an anti-Semite. And so this is really, this is the fallacy that has been used to, like you're saying, Deanna, very much. I don't support Taylor. I think he was one of them. But if you would turn that same argument around, that you know these lies have been fabricated to keep people away from, you know, it's this whole idea of somehow if you talk about conspiracy, there's something wrong with you, that you're paranoid. This is the worst kind of cowardly defense to try to address that kind of remark. You know, people. I, like a woman said, you know, we're all in this together. I'm not anybody's enemy. I'm not a conspirator. I'm not running a corporation. I'm not polluting rivers. I'm not sending, you know, troops anywhere. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. And to try to make it seem like my research then somehow is delving into the paranoid, it's unfair. Really, we should all be working together to sort these things out. And all I'm trying to do is make my contribution of what I know, of what I've discovered.
Okay. All righty. And are you going to answer Jeff's question?
The Holocaust. I mean, what do I know about the Holocaust? The thing is that the idea of killing millions of Jews because of the crimes of, you know what I mean? If Hitler, as Norman Cohen said, used protocols as his word for genocide to eradicate the Jewish race, to eradicate the Jewish problem. This is the worst kind of absurdity. That's the entire basis of racism, and that's really what the problem is blaming an entire people for the errors of a few. You know, I've never studied any of these Holocaust denial cases, so I have nothing to say for them or against them. You know, if ever those innocent people were slaughtered in that manner, or that excuse, then I think is deplorable.
Okay, so that's your answer?
Yes.
So you believe the official version of the Holocaust? Is that what you're saying?
Like I said, I've never studied the cases. Maybe some of the numbers were exaggerated. I don't know. It's not a question that I, you know, it's a dead end. It's a trap. It's not a question. You know, this is always a question to get people into this trap so that you can label them as an anti-Semite when there's really a whole lot of other things to discuss.
Okay. So, all righty. Let's quickly take Charles in San Jose. Charles, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Deanna and David. If you read the Talmud and the other Jewish writings, and I used to work in a synagogue, and I know that the Talmud's the only book that they use. The Jews do not claim to be Semites, and in fact, they're not. They're actually descended from Cain, according to the Talmud and Esau and so forth.
Exactly.
Well, you know, this is what I wrote about in my terrorism book. Is the entire the whole Aryan theory, as paradoxical as going to sound, is a Kabbalistic idea. And it has transformed Western, you know, American culture. You know, to understand how basically through the 18th century with the proliferation of secret societies, then these Kabbalistic ideas returned back into academia and created the myth of Western civilization.
Hold on. We do have to go to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Charles, please feel free to hang on over the break. Is David Livingston. Sorry, got to find your websites here. You have two websites. I've got so many notes. I've taken a lot of notes today on this program. Your websites are terrorism-illuminati.com and thedyinggod.com. And from one of our listeners, one can take the wrong books and combine them and come up with a wrong summary. She says, Corzani wrote one of the most fascinating books I've ever read. It is like a breeze of fresh air where honor and truth prevails. He referred jokingly to what he is blamed for, subversion, assassinations, etc. He was always amazed to read in the morning newspaper where he was at the time, plotting evil. What a joke these were, secret agencies of the Allied nations. Okay, so even Scorsese didn't really... he wasn't doing what they claimed he was doing, obviously. Okay.
Well, not in every case.
Jeff.
That doesn't mean Charles,
you worked in a synagogue. You brought up the Talmud. You asked David about the Talmud, and then David started talking about what else. What were you talking about, David, instead of the Talmud?
Well, basically, the creation of the year in race theory.
This is an occult idea.
This comes from the idea that it's an interpretation of the sons of God in Genesis who descended.
Okay, but what about the Talmud? What about the Talmud?
I'm getting there. So the idea is that according to the Book of Enoch, this is Lucifer and his legions who interbreed with human beings and teach them magic. So the occult, this is interpreted to refer to Atlantis. But of course, this is a Gnostic interpretation, so it's in reverse. So they're not. Lucifer is the true God.
We've only got about a minute.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get there as fast as I can. So what supposedly, how the scientists and occult influenced scientists of the 18th century and early 19th century interpreted this to mean is that these Atlantean survivors landed in the mountains of Asia, either in the Caucasus or somewhere near the Gobi Desert, descended from there and then conquered the known parts of the world. So where this came from was a similarity discovered between Sanskrit
Talmud,
and
Talmud. Bad, good.
So what it was interpreted to mean was that this was what they called an Indo-European race. Others called it the Aryan race. This then became the basis of a conception of European history. It was basically an attempt to create a non-Jewish version of history. There, when the Masons discovered Tantra in India, they interpreted this to mean that the Kabbalah had entered India before it had entered Judea.
Okay,
they
so called we're not going to get an answer,
and this
Charles.
Was an attempt to try to suggest that...
We're just not going to get an answer, and we're running out of time, and we still have one more phone call, and we're not going to have time for Nick. Sorry, Nick in Hawaii. David, it's been interesting, to say the least.
Deanna, can I state a few facts before we
please.
Go?
Please.
Yes, the swastika is one of God's names, Yahweh, in a single graphic. And speaking of India, the Garden of Eden was located in this area where Adam and Eve, the first two white people, were created. Caucasians are the founders of the multitude of nations and are the true Israelites. And National Socialism, from the evidence, is the golden rule in action.
All righty. We are out of time. Thank you, Charles, for calling in. Thank you, the rest of the callers, and thank you, David. And we'll talk with you tomorrow.